Major funding for the connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Jackie Lydon in for Dick Gordon, and this is The Connection. Bankrupt the terrorists. That's the rallying cry in a new $100 trillion lawsuit filed yesterday in federal court in Alexandria, Virginia. Families of 600 September 11th victims are suing a number of interests, including 3 Saudi princes, 7 international banks, and 8 Islamic charities for allegedly bankrolling al-Qaeda. The plaintiffs say their mission is to expose the extent and depth of sponsorship that terrorists receive from Saudi pocketbooks. The suit comes at a significant, precarious time in Saudi-American relations. Saudi Arabia is oil-rich and a strategic ally, the Bush administration hopes, if the U.S. attempts to unseat Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein. But it was also home to many of the 9/11 hijackers. Connection listeners, do you think this sort of lawsuit can be an effective weapon against terrorism? And what could it mean for U.S.-Saudi relations? Join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can join us online at theconnection.org. I'm joined today by Alan Gerson, co-counselor to the plaintiffs in this suit. Gerson also brought the suit against the Libyan government on behalf of families of Lockerbie terrorist bombing, and he has a book coming out called The Price of Terror, How the Families of the Victims of Pan Am 103 Brought Libya to Justice. And we're joined by Harvard Law professor Alan Dershowitz, who is part of the defense team for the Libyan convicted in the Lockerbie bombing case. He also has a new book out. It's called Why Terrorism Works. Thank you both for joining me.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Good morning, Jackie.
Good morning, Alan. Gerson, I'm going to have to do Dershowitz and Gerson on the show today. Alan Gerson, tell us a bit more about this lawsuit. I'd like to actually look at its introduction. Maybe we'll read that in just a moment or two, but give us something that you think sustains your argument.
Well, this is a lawsuit that is brought by over, as you pointed out, 600 families of the September 11th terrorist attack on the United States. It seeks damages. It's a civil suit for damages. It's not a criminal indictment, that needs to be pointed out. It names 7 foreign banks, 8 Islamic foundations, 3 members of the Saudi royal families. It names the government of Sudan. It does not name the government of Saudi Arabia. The complaint is over 250 pages long, and it details how, over the last decade, a system was in place whereby money was regularly provided to the Taliban and al-Qaeda by individuals who had reason to know that they were likely to be engaged in terrorist acts.
Okay, Alan Gerson, I want to take a look at some of the philosophical underpinnings here, and let's see if I can have a go at reading directly from your suit. This is just the second paragraph of it. It is the tradition of a civilized nation to allow redress for wrongs through an appeal to the rule of law and justice. Law is at the foundation of civilization. Thus, it is particularly fitting that the rule of law respond to an attack of savagery. For it is the rule of law and the voices of freedom that separate civilization from barbarism and anarchy. The rule of law is a powerful weapon to be drawn upon in difficult times and to be forged in our defense. The United States system of justice and the American people have faced enemies more powerful than these terrorists and their sponsors and will do so again. Let me ask you, Alan Dershowitz, if you think that this is a way to go after sources of terrorism.
I do, but first let me make a correction. I was not part of the defense team for the Libyan government or the Libyan defendant. I was retained by a British law firm to look into the possibility that the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine General Command may have been involved in bringing down the plane over Lockerbie. Having said that, I think this lawsuit is a terrific idea, but for reasons a little bit different than those that have been expressed thus far. I think it's very important for there to be private attorneys general checking and balancing the government. This lawsuit potentially can bring out information and issues that our own government doesn't want us to know about. Our government is very cozy with Saudi Arabia. Our president and people in our administration are very cozy with oil interests. Here we have private plaintiffs who have no obligation of patriotism, no obligation to this administration. Their only obligation is to truth and to their clients. And I think that if it gets past the motion to dismiss, discovery in this case can have a monumental impact on disclosing to the American public information that the public would not be given if the United States government were the only party to the fight against terrorism. So I think it has a tremendous potential for doing good.
Alan Gerson, is discovery a part of what this lawsuit is about?
Absolutely. In fact, I received an email late last night from an individual who was the former National Security Advisor to the Reagan administration, Richard Allen. And I anticipate receiving similar statements from other National Security Advisors through other administrations. I don't have it in front of me, so I'll paraphrase it, but it basically said exactly what Alan Dershowitz just said. Said that discovery gives us an opportunity to really understand the nature of the U.S. relationship with the Gulf states, Saudi states, and others, and to expose those elements within those systems that contributed to terrorism. I want to pick up also on what Alan Dershowitz said. He talked about essentially the privatization of justice. I was Deputy Assistant Attorney General for Legal Counsel. I was counsel to the U.S. delegation to the United Nations for many years. And there was a clear difference between, at times, between the interests of government, between the interests of statecraft, between the interests of diplomacy, and the interests of ordinary citizens who wish to hold the perpetrators of terrorism accountable. And the privatization of justice is what we're talking about. Privatization meaning that public and private ends can march in tandem to a common objective.
But these things also have a way of driving diplomacy. To my knowledge, the State Department hasn't commented on this yet, has it?
The State Department has not yet commented on it, but, you know, some of the reports that I hear, even in the preface to the show this morning, it talked about the fact that this case was likely to, I think the phrase was, complicate broader relations or the broader campaign by the United States against terrorism, and that necessarily involves the Saudis. And I'd like to make it clear that I don't think that this type of a suit necessarily or even should in any way really impact on that alliance. What we're talking about is what individuals did, and those individuals should be held accountable. And if the Saudis want to help hold them accountable, all the better.
Let's let Alan Dershowitz get in here.
Here's where I really disagree. I do think that in the end, the United States government may find that its interest, as it defines it, is being compromised by private interests. As I say, I think that's a very good thing. But I wouldn't be surprised, Alan Gerson, if in the end you'll find that the State Department, the Justice Department, are not completely on your side. They indeed may side with the other group in seeking to dismiss this, because you are, in effect, eliminating their monopoly over information. Now, I think what you're doing is very important and very positive, but I think you should go in there with your eyes open and anticipate that in a case like this, you may find triangulation. That is, you'll have your side, you'll have the United States government side, and then you'll have the Saudis, the banks on the other side. Indeed, it may end up being four-sided. You may end up identifying some bad guys that everybody is opposed to, and then you may end up finding some banks or the Saudi princes where you're opposed to them, or at least want to subject them to depositions, and the United States government may come in and say, no, really, we would much prefer, as a government, not to have them subjected to a deposition in a private court, because it will complicate diplomacy. So I think, yes, it may complicate diplomacy, but yes, that's a good thing, not a bad thing.
Let me just respond to that for a second by saying that Alan Dershowitz, I agree with you, but I'm also one step ahead of you.
Good.
I filed suit against Libya in 1993. Mm-hmm. I had one client, Bruce Smith, at that time. This was in the U.S. District Court, Judge Stanley Sporkin presiding, and suddenly the doors opened up to the courtroom, and I saw a bunch of lawyers coming in. They happened to have been my former colleagues at the Justice Department's Civil Division, former trial lawyer colleagues of mine. And I said to my client, Bruce Smith, says, oh, terrific, the Justice Department's about to join us in the suit. And my client hit me in the ribs and he said, Alan, they don't seem to be walking over to our table, they're walking over to Libya's table.
Right.
And they did. And they filed a reply brief on Libya's side in the District Court, the U.S. Court of Appeals, and the United States Supreme Court, because the issue was whether or not the vaunted doctrine of sovereign immunity, the concept from the 19th century or earlier that no state should be accountable to ordinary citizens and obligated only to itself, that concept was revered more than the rights of ordinary citizens to hold foreign states accused of terrorism accountable.
Alan Dershowitz, let me just jump in here at the risk of getting between two such formidable lawyers. Alan Dershowitz, you analyzed the Lockerbie case, whatever your role in it was, and I'd like to know succinctly, what lessons do you think Lockerbie, and maybe you could enlarge that and say even from prosecuting big tobacco, apply here?
Well, first of all, one lesson is that these cases almost are never won in court civilly. They're won by settlements. If you look at all the Holocaust cases, for example, which have done tremendous amounts of good and disgorged lots of improper profits from Swiss banks and other banks, those cases, none of them ever won in court. Tobacco cases primarily are won through settlement. Lockerbie, of course, there was the criminal case, and then the civil cases, hopefully going to be settled. So what happens is if you get past the motion to dismiss, which is the crucial motion, and then the other side knows it has to disgorge all kind of information and may be subject to monumental damages, then they sit down and begin to settle seriously. So I think the key moment in this case is going to be the motion to dismiss, whether the United States government comes in on the side of the good guys or the bad guys, or it doesn't come in at all, and how a trial court resolves this motion to dismiss. Once we get past that motion, I think it's pretty good sailing for the plaintiffs, and then I think the question only becomes how much, not whether.
Alan Gerson, $100 trillion?
No, it's actually in the hundreds of billions of dollars. But let me also respond to the question that you put to Alan Dershowitz, what are the lessons from Lockerbie? Mm-hmm. And if I might, one of the individuals that reviewed the book that I did with my co-author, Jerry Adler of Newsweek, entitled The Price of Terror, one of the reviewers, Scott Turow, wrote the following about the lessons of that case, and I'd like to just quote from it because I think it's pertinent. He said that the families of Pan Am 103 have persevered in using the law to fight back, and their experiences hold an important example for us in how law and reason can triumph over terror, and how unwavering resolve can lead to justice. I think that's the lesson.
I agree with that. I agree with that. By the way, on Pan Am 103, we're not sure yet we have the complete picture. I know Alan and I have talked about this off the radio, and I think we both agree that the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine General Command has gotten a free ride and gotten off the hook here, even though the United States government, the Israeli government, and early on the British government all concluded that the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine may very well have played an important role. But because they don't have a deep pocket, like the Libyan government, and because the United States is trying at this point to make nice with Libya, and that's a very positive thing, at this point in time, we don't have necessarily the full truth to whether or not the PFLP General Command was in fact involved.
Okay, thank you very much. Deep pockets and possibly shifting sands in diplomacy. When we come back, you're listening to The Connection on NPR. I'm Jackie Lydon, and this is The Connection. And we're talking about a lawsuit filed in U.S. District Court in Virginia yesterday in which 600 relatives of victims of 9/11 have accused various Saudi entities of sponsoring hijackers in the 9/11 case and who are asking for hundreds of billions of dollars of damage. The co-counsel in that case is Alan Gerson. Alan, you say that this is not aimed at the Saudi government. But in your own arguments, you quote something that's very much been making the rounds in the last couple of weeks. And this is an alleged report by Iran Corporation analyst. I may be mispronouncing the last name because I don't have a pronouncer on it, Lauren Merowitz, who advised the advisory group to the Department of Defense and accused Saudi Arabia directly of numerous things. And let me just read from his own report. Saudi Arabia supports our enemies and attacks our allies. Now, you have that line in your brief. So aren't you, in fact, accusing, indirectly at least, the government of being behind this?
Yes, indirectly. But we have not named the government of Saudi Arabia directly as a defendant.
Mm-hmm. And the reason for that, obviously, is the sovereign immunity doctrine. It's clear.
It's not the sovereign immunity doctrine.
Well,
we believe that there is no legal bar whatsoever under the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act from holding the Saudi government accountable, because unlike the situation in with regard to Libya and the downing of Pan Am 103, since the tort occurred in the United States, we have jurisdiction
right.
under what is called the 1976 Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act. It was more in terms of both a tactical decision and a decision based on the fact that we continue to gather evidence and we have a right to amend our complaint as that evidence comes in.
Well, I hope you will amend the complaint, because I have no question, and you talked about your book and my book, Why Terrorism Works. The whole thesis is that state sponsorship is the key to terrorism, and
okay.
it's the thesis of your lawsuit as well. You could not have Al-Qaeda terrorism without at least a wink and a nod from the Saudi government.
All right, Alan Dershowitz. The number to call to get in on the conversation is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. We're going to bring in Richard Murphy, who is a former ambassador to Saudi Arabia and with the Council on Foreign Relations. And welcome to the show, Ambassador Murphy.
Thank you.
Have you been listening to, what we've been talking about thus far?
Indeed.
What do you think will be the complications for U.S. foreign policy as this suit works its way through the courts?
Well, let me say, first of all, I hate the term complications in foreign policy when we're talking about the tragedy of September 11, that it seems to be resorting to a very sort of pompous doctrine that we can't complicate the business of diplomats by human tragedies. But that said, there's been for the last year, it really predates September 11th, a campaign to denigrate the Saudis. It goes back to at least to the time in 96 when they didn't move quickly enough on the Al Hobar bombing in the eastern province, which cost the lives of some 19 American servicemen then. And the pressures and the articles accusing the Saudis of not only bad faith, but up through this latest RAND briefing of actually being the sponsor of international terrorism, it's assumed a dimension which I frankly don't find credible. But I gather that the lawsuit has referred to unpublished intelligence documents provided by the French intelligence. I don't know what they say, so I don't know where the case is going to go, how far it's going to go.
Alan Gerson?
Well, I'm sure Richard Murphy, even though he's not an attorney, knows full well that any attorney that files a complaint without having checked all of the factual allegations and without believing that he can prove his case at trial is subject to reprimand by the court. We filed a detailed complaint of over 250 pages. Very unusual to have a complaint with that much detail. And our aim is to expose and to illustrate all of these facts, and it will be for a judge to decide. We anticipate that the most of the Saudi defendants will do what Libya did, and I will say honorably in this regard, honorably in the sense that they did come into district court and have fought us on the facts and on the law and said to the court directly that if there was a judgment, they will comply with the judgment.
But, you know, you may both be right in the sense that the Saudi government may not have ever stated as a policy, and I'm sure this is true, that they would like to see terrorism against the United States, such as that occurred on September 9th, on 11th. But on the other hand, they may have put in motion actions, radicalization, teaching, financing of radical groups, radical Islamic approaches that made September 11th all but inevitable. And the role of the courts is to determine causation, not necessarily intent. And it may be that what the Saudi government or people centrally involved in the Saudi government did in some respects, bears a causal relationship to September 11th without that having been its intended result.
Richard Murphy, Ambassador Murphy, from what you know, and I think you've had a chance to look at the first few pages of this suit in which it talks about Islam in Saudi Arabia, Wahhabism, do you think that these three princes are necessarily going to be more prominently accused, profiled than other members of the Saudi government? Do you think that this is going to perhaps elucidate, have unintended consequences, as it's argued?
Let me pick up a point that Alan Dershowitz made first, Jackie. The question of putting into motion radical groups by the whether the Saudi government did that or not. You know, we could be charged with the same thing. Mm-hmm. We could be charged with condoning the spread of Wahhabism, the Saudi practice of Islam, as a defense against Iran ever since the Iranian Revolution, and then our sponsorship, our heavy financing of the Mujahideen, which included Osama bin Laden back in the 80s in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
So we've done a bit ourselves to inflame the what I call the holy war spirit that has that did lead to the unintended consequence of September 11th.
Is Saudi Arabia such a bad player?
A bad player?
A bad player in geopolitics. There's been a lot going around Washington, as you point out, since 9/11 and some even before. Are they unreliable as an ally?
First of all, I don't use the word ally lightly, and I don't apply it to Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is a kingdom in which we've had mutual interests over the year, primarily in their supply of oil at reasonable prices and our readiness to defend them against external aggression, not to defend a ruling family. We can't do that, but to defend the country against Iraq, against Egypt in the 60s, against Iran in the 80s.
Okay. Let's take a phone call. We're talking about a new lawsuit filed yesterday on behalf of victims of September 11th against various Saudi entities. We should add, too, it also names the government of Sudan, various Islamic charities. Let's take a call from Elizabeth, who's calling from Boston. The number to call to get in on the conversation is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Hello, Elizabeth.
Hi. I want to go back to Alan Dershowitz's point about the private attorneys general exposing things that our government may not have wanted us to know about or that might be inconvenient for someone that they don't wish to embarrass, something like that. I really think that this cuts out the American people in the sense, in two senses. Number one, it's in the court, which is a very, and it needs to be, a very well-bounded and well-moderated environment. But more importantly, it's after the fact, and we're a democracy. And where I'm coming from is that during the Reagan administration, I had a very low-level research analyst job in Washington reading papers from Pakistan and Afghanistan, I mean newspapers, and India, as the Soviet war came to its very sorry conclusion. And it was very clear to see the incursion of the Saudi charities and government as they built their hospitals and schools. And you could read the dedication speeches, and you could see where they were going. It was not rocket science. I don't think that the American public would have found it confusing. But, yes, it was inconvenient.
Okay, let's see.
They need access to the information, and I think that Brent Scowcroft and Henry Kissinger taking their stand on Iraq and saying, let's think this through, let's, you know, not just look at the goal, but look at the process, I think they're doing a great service to the American public and the military.
Let's go back to your original point,
Elizabeth. Let's not be too optimistic about this, though, because let's remember that the courts, which you mentioned as a controlled setting, also are understandably very patriotic. They may give Alan Gerson some information, but then may seal that information if the United States government comes in and says it would be against the national security interests of the government for this information to get out. the game of fighting terrorism is played in dark alleys and beneath the radar screen. In my book, Why Terrorism Works, I explain, for example, what happened when various governments made deals with other various governments behind the scenes, and it took 30 years to find out about it. For example, do you remember when Israel had 11 people killed during the Olympics in 1980? This is actually now the 30th anniversary. We've now discovered that the German government made a deal with Palestinian terrorists to have a fake hijacking of a plane in order to free two Palestinian terrorists. Now, the governments didn't want that information to come out. It only came out when private attorneys general, like Alan Gerson, finally said, enough's enough, we need to know this information.
Alan Gerson, I want to hear something about how the plaintiffs feel in this case. If you were to lose in the courts and perhaps have something far less than the settlement that you're looking for, would it still be a moral victory in that we hear more of their voices and more of their complaints and sadness?
Well, the families want two things. They want, first, exposure of the facts. And secondly, they want accountability. They want accountability through recognition by the courts as to what occurred. And that recognition takes the form of a judgment in which compensatory and punitive damages are awarded. They can't control everything. As Alan Dershowitz pointed out, what very often happens in these kinds of cases where you have sensitive foreign policy issues involved is that there is a letter that is sent. In fact, in my old job as Deputy Assistant Attorney General for Legal Counsel, that was my job, to write letters on behalf of the Justice Department or the White House to the courts saying that, Your Honor, this is an issue that involves sensitive questions of foreign policy. Please defer to the executive branch. Do not get involved in this. Fortunately, what has happened over the years is that the courts have become sensitized, and they won't simply end a lawsuit because the U.S. government thinks that it may possibly impair on its conduct of foreign relations. So the families think that they have a very good chance of exposing what occurred. They think that they have a very good chance of overcoming any obstacles that the U.S. government may put in the way of this case. I don't know if they will, but it's quite possible, okay. Perhaps even probable.
All right. Thank you, Elizabeth, for your call. The number to call to get in on the conversation, 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK for the connection. Phil is calling from Providence, Rhode Island. Hello, Phil.
Hi. How are you today?
Good. Thank you.
Good. Couple of comments. First of all, the idea of the last gentleman who just spoke about writing a letter to the courts and saying, please don't do this or what. Well, you know, the big picture there really is that the government really holds all the cards. In other words, in the name of national security, in the name of terror, If I go to a person or an agency who holds all information and I ask them to give me the facts, but I really don't have access to them, I have to rely on the fact of whether or not they're going to and who's going to oversee them. They can dwindle out or parcel out whatever information in the name of national security. So one really doesn't know. The other thing is that the terrorism, as it is described, is most definitely religiously and spiritually fueled by so-called cutting out some of the funds or exacerbating some of the money that may exist. It will put a dent or stop them. I don't think so. In fact, it could fuel the situation. The United States and Saudi Arabia are tied together here for, at the very least, money. And if the American public were to have access behind closed doors of everything that went on, we would find our government culpable.
All right. Thank you, Phil. Richard Murphy, what about that point? Not so much perhaps only culpability, but the relationship as it stands.
Well, the relationship has been close. I mentioned it's been a question of mutual interest. We have come to the defense of Saudi Arabia. They were a great support to us during the war to expel Iraq from Kuwait back in 91. And that relationship was laid down a couple generations ago, and we've both done pretty well with it.
Ambassador Murphy, I also want to ask, do you think these kinds of lawsuits quell terrorism?
I take the point that Phil made calling in that he speaks of terrorism being religiously fueled. I spoke of the spread of Wahhabism, which we certainly condoned and which we, in fact, welcomed in the case of Afghanistan and defense against Iran. But what I would like to make the point is that the tracking of money, and that's something that's going to be, as I imagine, central to the lawsuit, is a very tough business. The FBI found that a very tough business when it was trying to surveil the activities of an Islamic charitable foundation down in Texas. I understand that case was under study for some 7 years. Case of Saudi Arabia, they had no system in place to monitor, as a government, to monitor the flow of money through charitable foundations until last October when they came to Washington and discussed how to set up such a system with our Treasury.
There is a lawsuit, as you probably know now, pending. The United States Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit has approved the lawsuit filed against various Islamic charities in the United States for the death of Americans in Israel and in the United States. Nathan Lewin, a lawyer, has brought that lawsuit. And they are now, I think, in the process of beginning to track some of the money. And they're discovering, of course, that a lot of the transactions are very hard to trace. They're done through this method of Islamic exchange of funds, which doesn't involve keeping a paper trail. It involves a lot of oral discussion. And I think you'll find it's not going to be so easy to track this money, though I think I certainly commend you for trying.
Thank you, Phil, very much for calling. Our guests in this hour of The Connection are Alan Gerson, who is co-counsel in the lawsuit brought yesterday against various Saudi entities, various Islamic organizations, three princes of the Saudi kingdom, and the government of Sudan, asking for hundreds of billions of dollars of damages and compensation for families of the victims of 9/11. We're also speaking with Alan Dershowitz and with Richard Murphy, a former ambassador to Saudi Arabia. Get in on the conversation. The number to call is 1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-TALK makes the Saudi connection. You're listening to The Connection on National Public Radio.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Jackie Lydon, sitting in for Dick Gordon, and this is The Connection. We're talking in this hour about a lawsuit filed yesterday on behalf of relatives of victims in the 9/11 attacks. My guests in this hour are Alan Gerson. He's co-counsel to the plaintiffs in this lawsuit. He also brought suit against the Libyan government on behalf of families of Lockerbie's terrorist bombing. Also joining us is Alan Dershowitz, who is part of, another prominent lawyer, and he has a new book out, Why Terrorism Works. And we're also joined by Richard Murphy, former ambassador to Saudi Arabia and at the Council on Foreign Relations. Let's go first to Elizabeth, who is calling from Jamestown, Rhode Island. Welcome to The Connection, Elizabeth.
Thank you. Hello?
Hello, yes.
Really what I wanted to say was that I think that these cases are very important, and as a person who lost her husband in Lockerbie, what was most important to me was the level and comprehensive information that was thrown out by what's called the discovery process in both the criminal, in both the litigation that took place here in the United States, and also the fatal accidents inquiry in Scotland, that this kind of wide-reaching process of discovery that the lawyers conduct makes public a whole range of information that no government would voluntarily disclose. And that information includes not only information about who the perpetrators of the crime are, but also it illuminates what some of our own failures have been. And I think that that is incredibly important in addressing issues of safety as well as attempting to prosecute international terrorists.
I'm very sorry to hear about your husband, Elizabeth. And what she's saying, obviously, Alan, is that whatever the compensation was, Elizabeth, you're saying that this forces an argument, that in a sense the monetary trigger forces an argument that would end a debate and a sense of revealing cause that would just otherwise not take place, a conversation, if you will.
Jackie, let me, if I might, comment on that as well.
Alan Gerson.
And to Elizabeth, my condolences, of course, too. A question was raised about the resources of private attorneys to undertake this kind of activity. Isn't it terribly difficult? How can you get access to these documents? And the answer is it is terribly difficult. It is terribly costly. It does require an enormous investment of not only time and energy, but enormous amounts of money. In this regard, there has been no mention of my co-counsel, and I think I should tell you who he is. And that's Ron Motley of the Ness Motley firm in Charleston, South Carolina. And the reason he's involved is not only because he's one of America's greatest trial lawyers and has been recognized as such, but his firm and he himself were responsible for a judgment of over $300 billion against the tobacco industry, in which he represented over 36 different states. And that was responsible for an enormous change in our public policy towards the cigarette industry. So it's that type of commitment and those types of resources that provide me with the confidence that we can prevail in this case.
And I think to add just one word to that, remember the Republican administration rails against trial lawyers like Ron Motley because trial lawyers like Ron Motley and Alan Gerson sometimes make it difficult for corporations. They make corporations accountable. And I want to say, you know, Two cheers at least for trial lawyers because they do play a very important role as private attorneys general, the cigarette industry, the asbestos cases, other cases, and we shouldn't generally have the kind of negative attitude we have toward tort trial lawyers. You know, sometimes they get paid too much with contingency fees, and there could be regulations on that. But in general, trial lawyers do an enormously important job of picking up the slack where the government doesn't do enough.
Thank you,
Alan Dershowitz, for that.
$300 billion to Ron Motley, that must be some pretty deep pockets. Elizabeth, thank you very much for your telephone call. The number to call to get in on the conversation is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. And we're speaking now with Jan, who's calling from Boston. Welcome to The Connection, Jan.
Hello. I have 2 points to make. The first one is, if you indict those who financed the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, then you wind up indicting the U.S. government, which paid $48 million to the Taliban in 1998 and more or less paid their salary for the next 10 years in a country that has an average annual income of about $100. So that is one point. And the other point is I'm a citizen of Germany. I was born in Leipzig in 1940, and I experienced the saturation bombing of that city. And I'm looking forward to filing a suit against the deep pockets of American banks for inflicting damage that was absolutely insane and unnecessary and had no effect at all on World War II and was just a act of revenge and terror. And once that is done, of course, then the Vietnamese will bethink themselves and come to the conclusion that they, too, had been attacked. After all, there was never a war declared. And this attack, admittedly by our government, was a misreading of facts. It was a horrendous mistake. And wouldn't it be just logical now to go after the deep pockets of banks and industries that financed the destruction of Vietnam?
Richard Murphy, how big of a can of worms are we opening here with lawsuits like this one? First used against the U.S. tobacco industry, I might point out. But still, to take Jan's point.
Well, it's a case of a size beyond imagining. I just
I recognize that Alan Gerson says that for tactical reasons they're not going after the Saudi government, but in fact they have named two princes, one of whom is the Minister of Defense and third in the line of succession in the Saudi government, and another one who was until this time last year head of Saudi intelligence for some 20 years. So I suspect that they will move on to target the government specifically, but those two have been certainly key leaders of the Saudi government for the past generation. The complications that I referred to earlier on the war on terrorism, I know that's something that came up as when the Iraqi...
Would you please answer my question?
Which is that, sir?
Would you please answer my question? I asked. I'm making you aware of international complications and implications.
Yes.
That now opens the door to anyone who has been attacked or has been a victim of what he or she feels is an unjust attack, that these persons now can and should indict A, the American government, and B, any industry and bank and organization that is involved.
Jan, let me just ask you, maybe that is not such a bad thing. Frequently, citizens of all sorts of countries, and certainly republics and democracies, feel they have the right to have a lot more participation in global decisions than they do. And so perhaps these kinds of lawsuits would press that advantage.
And I'm very happy that this right is considered. But what is happening here is that a very complicated moral question, a moral and ethical question, has been translated to the lowest common denominator, finally money we can get, when there has never been a real debate in the United States why people would take their lives and snuff themselves out. How frustrated do these people have to be before
that
they do anything like this?
Let me respond to that.
Okay,
Alan Dershowitz. That's total nonsense. Let me tell you, nonsense. Terrorism is not a bottom up phenomenon. It is not a function of frustration. The vast majority of people in the world are frustrated. They don't use terrorism. Terrorism is a top down phenomenon. It is a logical, rational approach. It is warfare by other means. Terrorism works because the European countries for years, since 1970, rewarded terrorism. Germany was among the worst offenders. France, Spain, and Italy. It is not a question of frustration. Frustration may explain how the leaders can recruit people into the activity. But the decision to knock down the World Trade Center, the decision to engage in terrorism in the Middle East, is all made at the very top levels. We know of no instance of major terrorist act engaged in from the Middle East which wasn't done with the approval of state sponsorship, religious sponsorship, or major organizational sponsorship. So the frustration excuse, I think, is total nonsense.
Alan Gerson, is that what's behind the lawsuit here? And I would like you to at least touch on, please, on Jan's point about...
Listen, I think Jan's point is a valid point in terms of reciprocity. If we have a right to sue Libya, which we gained through the passage of the 1996 Anti-Terrorism Act, then... It was argued at the time, well, if that opens up the doors for litigation, it means that the United States government can be sued.
I'm sorry. I think that we've just lost Alan Gerson. Well, Richard Murphy, would you like to pick up where he left off?
Well, I don't think I have anything to add. This goes way beyond my ken, I'm afraid.
But, you know, let me add one thing. Curtis LeMay, our general in the Pacific in the Second World War, said that if we had lost the war, that he would have been put on trial as a war criminal for the firebombing of Tokyo. And Jan's point about the bombing of Dresden and other cities, every country in the world has violated the rules of law by attacking civilian targets. And if they were ever brought to the dock, the irony, of course, is the only country in the world today that is being criticized for attacking civilians, ironically, is Israel, which has taken enormous care in not dropping bombs, and yet it has been called into the dock, which shows how easy it is to distort international law and focus on one country if that country is disliked, as it is by so many European countries. So there is something to hear about this.
Let's give another caller. We have just a couple of minutes left. Hassan is calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hassan, welcome to The Connection. If you could just keep it brief, we're running out of time. Thanks.
Yes, my question very briefly is whether or not this lawsuit contributes to a campaign that some of us sense has been taking place across the various spheres of society to really bring the American people, unfortunately, in a sort of oppositional stance vis-a-vis Islam. I guess one of the two categories of defendants that haven't been named up until this point include Islamic charities and include also banks that are involved in the Islamic finance industry. And that sort of opposition is something that makes some of us wonder, what is the benefit to the American people in such a stance?
Richard Murphy, let me ask you, what is the best form at this juncture, do you think, to deal with some of these tensions and discoveries?
Well, I've always been an advocate for the quiet diplomacy and trying to work out. We've got an issue that this administration and no administration has really come to grips with. How do you deal with a highly evangelistic practice, in this case of Saudi Arabia, that has some horrible unforeseen consequences when exported to other countries? And that's what happened in Afghanistan. That's what's happened in Pakistan. And we don't know how to handle that, because we know that the heartland of Wahhabism in Saudi Arabia, it's a government and a people extremely proud of their practice of the faith. They feel it's the best interpretation, the most faithful interpretation. And yet when exported to other countries, it's allowed developments which of mentality which have created students in these religious schools that have been good targets, easy targets for recruiters on the top-down. I agree with Alan Dershowitz on that, a top-down recruitment effort. But it's a tough one. We've not really wrestled with that very seriously.
Alan, just very briefly.
I think the chips have to fall where they may. If, in fact, Islamic schools, some of them, and Islamic banks, some of them, foment this kind of terrorism, the American public has the right to know that. And it's important for those who are in charge to take responsibility and make sure that Islam is not misused and misinterpreted so as to bring about these terrible results. But a lawsuit has the virtue of letting the chips fall where they may and finding out the actual facts.
Okay.
But it will be seen as persecution of Islam, Alan. I think that's a fact.
I think that's right. But it won't be by the government. It'll be by private interests.
Hassan, thanks for your call. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being with us. You heard from Alan Gerson. He's co-counsel to the plaintiffs in the lawsuit against Saudi interests, and he's also the author of The Price of Terror, How the Families of the Victims of Pan Am 103 Brought Libya to Justice. Harvard Law professor Alan Dershowitz is the author of the new book, Why Terrorism Works, and Richard Murphy is former ambassador to Saudi Arabia and now with the Council on Foreign Relations. The Connection is produced by Sean Carberry, Lisa Chow, Sarah Field, Allison McAdam, Lindsay Miller, Tara Murphy, Christina Russo, and Doug Shugarts. Graham Smith is our senior producer. I'm Jackie Lydon, in for Dick Gordon, and this is The Connection from NPR.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. This is